Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 407. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 246, A Story About Him. And I got to tell you, if you listened to last Night Vale episode, Cecil's sister apparently did tell him the story about their dad, and then he didn't remember any of it. And honestly, for some reason, it never occurred to me that we would get to hear that story.
Right, and this is the opposite of some of the episodes we've had recently where I've thought that this has been, it's such a great standalone episode, and if no one's ever listened to anything about Night Vale, they would probably still enjoy the episode. Well, in this one, no, you have to know the lore, and it's not just to know who these characters are, it's just to get the feel of Night Vale and how just, like, everything's sort of menacing a lot of the times for reasons that you really can't put your finger on.
Yeah, and I know that Cecil and his sister's relationship has been a little rocky, and I know that their mother was not a pleasant person, but we get so much more depth into that, and I think probably the most important piece of information to come out of this is that Cecil and Abby's father left at some point when they were kids. And for years, Abby blamed Cecil because Cecil was born and then the dad just disappeared. And so that, I think, is the root of a lot of the anger between the two of them.
Yeah, and also the fact that their mother was incredibly distant, like not very affectionate. You know, Abby says at one point that their mother gave them nothing, but then she says, that's not fair. She gave us a home. She made sure we were fed and clothed, but there was no hugging or anything like that. And Abby had to pretty much raise Cecil, which is really going along with this theme I've been seeing with a lot of families, parentification, where the older children, it becomes their responsibility to raise the younger children, which means the older children didn't get a childhood the way the younger child might have. So there's resentment built up for that as well.
Yes. And Cecil, of course, he knew that she resented him and her anger towards him. He responded in kind. Also, you know, it certainly wasn't a happy home life. So they were angry at each other for many years. And one of the things that she is still angry at him about, even though she tries not to be, is how he treated Steve. Because Cecil couldn't take out his anger on Abby, because he's kind of scared of Abby. And that sounds truthful. I think that's correct. But he found that Steve would actually take his abuse. And she is still so angry at Cecil for doing that.
And because Cecil keeps forgetting these conversations, that seems to tie into the fact that Cecil doesn't actually ever acknowledge the fact that he was horrible to Steve. Like, he's talking about, when he talks about Steve now, it's like he's always liked Steve, and Steve's always been the best guy. And the idea that Steve was bullying him on his radio show, Abby talked about that too. He isn't acknowledging that. And you got to wonder what it's going to take to break this memory dam that's going on with Cecil.
Yeah, and she does get to a point in the conversation where she says, you know, I think we're both starting to suck less. And she does enjoy their dinners that they have together. She enjoys getting everybody, you know, with Cecil and Carlos and Esteban and Steve and Janice and playing games and everything. And she says, I forgive you. I forgive myself. And I hope that you'll forgive me. And she starts to cry at one point. And I think the voice actress was really doing a very good job.
And I wonder if people who have difficult relationships with their own parents and maybe their own siblings will really get something out of this. Because she talks about the fact that she tried for years to get her mother to give them some information about what happened to their father. And their mother never acknowledged their father, not didn't talk about him, never even acknowledged the question. There seems like there was an awful lot of manipulation and deflection and gaslighting, and the fact that she would accuse Abby of smoking, even though Abby's never smoked. And it would be things like you would start a conversation with her and it would end up with her having to clean out her mother's closet instead of going on to the date that she had planned. That was the kind of thing that was happening all the time. And I feel like I know people who have gone through some of this crap before.
Yeah, and then she said something interesting. She said that their dad came back, but she meant that figuratively. He came back when Cecil was old enough to start drawing, because Cecil would draw pictures of the family and owls, I think. And she looked at the pictures that Cecil was drawing, and then she went and found some of her old drawings. Cecil is drawing the same drawings that she used to draw. It's just years apart. And then he would have dreams but he would say he didn't remember them. But then he would tell her stories about the dreams because he thought they were real. And what he was telling her, he was actually narrating her dreams as well. So not only are they drawing the same thing, they're dreaming the same thing.
Yeah, like going on hikes and seeing lots of owls and strolling through the redwoods and digging holes. That's, yeah. But she has this one really vivid memory of getting up in the middle of the night and going out into the living room, and there's a man sitting in their dining room. And the static noise going on. The music stuff was fantastic in this episode. Oh, yeah. But that growing static in the background just makes you want to like keep looking behind yourself. And whoever it was stood up and started turning around. And she closed her eyes really fast before she could see the person's face. And the person, whoever it was, shouted her name. And then when she opened her eyes, they were gone. And then she noticed her mother was sitting smoking on the other side of the dining room table, and they never talked about it ever again.
Now, she starts to say that she thinks that Cecil has more of a connection to their father. I'm not entirely sure why she thinks that, but she kind of interrupts herself, and she's like, oh, do you hear that outside? Is that rain? Steve, could you go to the window and check the weather? Let me go to the weather.
That's definitely a new one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked this one. It was kind of a British pop sort of song with maybe a little folk mixed in.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote down. So it was Easter Island by The Violet Hourglass. I had written down folk rock or 60s, 70s pop. I look in their website and it says quiet power pop. And I'm like, okay, that's a new description I hadn't heard of before, but it sounds about right.
So we come back from the weather. And if you don't listen to any other part of this episode, I think you need to listen to this bit. Because Abby talks for a while about ghosts, but she thinks their father is haunting them. But this isn't like a horror movie ghost. And she starts listing all the other things. Like, ghosts really are watermarks, like a trail that's been worn through the grass from one place to another. That's a ghost. And she goes on in that vein for a while. And she says something like, and emotions are tire tracks on our souls. So it's the idea of being haunted by somebody, but it's just every emotion and feeling and lack that you have is what's haunting you. And meanwhile, she's always been kind of kicking herself in the fact that she never tried to understand her mother. Like, she was a child, but, you know, there's really this human condition where you're actually supposed to reach out to people close to you and find out if they're okay. And she just never thought to do that. And she thinks their mother was haunted by their father as well.
Yep. She says she doesn't know what their father did to their mother, but she knows that her mother was angry. And she says this thing that he's doing now where she can never see his face in dreams and it's just she doesn't know what's going on. She says that I think he was like that in real life. He wasn't enigmatic. He was fucking frustrating. There was even a warning at the beginning of this episode. I think that's the first profanity we've ever had in an iPhone.
Could be. I don't remember them ever doing that disclaimer before.
Nope. But yeah, she just basically tells Cecil, I think you should keep looking for him, even though I don't think she knows exactly what point it's going to make. But yeah, she thinks that he does exist in some way, I guess. But she definitely does seem to think that he's dead.
Yeah. And she says, I really hope you remember me telling you this story this time. But then they go on to their Scrabble game. And she's like, what word that she's going to play. And it got her 30 points and tells Cecil that it's his turn. And she's like, Cecil? And obviously he has now forgotten this entire thing. And that kind of reminded me of the Empowered graphic novel with the fact that the caged demon wolf keeps telling Ninjette her story his story and remembering what she's told him, even though she'll never remember the conversation because she keeps getting blackout drunk every time.
Yep. And then that's the end of the episode. I don't know. I mean, it was really cool. We got an entirely new character, and she's existed for a long time, but we've never heard from Abby ever. She's always just been Janice's mom, basically. We knew a little bit about her when Cecil's and her mom died, I guess, but in the space of one episode, she is a fully fleshed out character.
Yes, she is. And I don't know if I ever thought to wonder what Abby thought of how Cecil was treating Steve that entire time. And especially, it's not like Steve has been shaking this off. Cecil's treatment hurt. Yeah. And I remember when we had that one episode that was him throughout the years, and he really does want Cecil to acknowledge at some point how badly he hurt him by treating him like that.
Yeah. I want to go back and listen to that episode of Steve, all the years that he was coaching and everything. What a wonderful episode that was.
It was so good, yes. Yeah. And that's another episode that I think you have to know the characters and all the backstory and everything to really appreciate how powerful that episode was.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for Night Vale for this week. So what I wanted to talk about was I finally went to go see Dune Part 2.
Wasn't that exhausting? Wow. I mean, just the scope and the scale and just the emotions and the music and all of it. Oh, so amazing.
I think one of my favorite moments was the very first time that he managed to get up on a worm and ride the worm. I mean, it was done so well, and the music,
so
and
well.
It was just like, I was grinning the whole time watching it.
And I think, I love the choices that they make in the imagery in these movies, because when someone's riding a sandworm, it's not like the David Lynch sandworm riding, where there's this gigantic tubular thing on top of the sand moving along. It's basically people flying by pretty much at ground level, just hanging on for dear life to what it is that they've hooked into the sandworm. And it makes the speed so much more obvious. And then the fact that they were like, they like put tents and everything to transport people across on sandworms, and they're just zipping across the desert.
So much of the imagery in all aspects of this movie were so cool. I loved. They're on, I believe it's Getty Prime, which is the Harkonnen homeworld, and you get to see Fred Rutha, right?
Yes.
Crazy guy, which, oh man, I don't think the books quite sold how crazy he was. This movie really sold how he was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the whole, like, scene on, like, the gladiator arena and everything. I mean, it's huge, and you could really feel all that space. But I loved after the battle and everything, and it was really kind of a celebration for his birthday. These weird-ass fireworks in the sky, and it's almost like exploding ink blobs, and I thought, those are so cool.
Right? I never even considered that they would do something messed up with the fireworks, but it really did look kind of menacing.
Yeah, that was neat. Here's a weird thing. It's been many years since I read Dune. I even own a copy. I just haven't read it in years. How did I get all the way... by the way, spoiler warnings if you haven't seen Dune. This is a
gigantic
big one right
spoiler
here.
Warning, yeah.
How did I forget that Jessica was actually the daughter of Baron Harkonnen? How did I forget
that? Oh, man. I remembered that. What I was surprised about was that I completely forgot until the end of the movie that Alia is a character in the first book. She doesn't just show up in the second book. She's there for the second half of the entire first Dune book, and they cut her out of this completely, other than the fact that Paul knows that his mother is pregnant.
Yep. Well, we did get to see sort of a flash forward scene. He can, you know, because Paul's taken the water of life and he can see the future and everything. And so he sees a version of his sister when she's grown up, and it's Anna Taylor-Joy. And I thought, wow, what a good choice.
Yep. And Nathan leaned over at that point and was like, she's in everything now. Yeah,
she really is.
Her star has really risen at this point. So she's in a lot of stuff. But the casting in these movies is fantastic. I haven't had a quibble with any of them. I love Rebecca Ferguson
as
Paul's mother. I mean, she's just like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, yeah, that's perfect. And Zendaya is nothing like I imagined Chani when I was reading the books, and it works beautifully.
It works great. I do like, that's one of the things I remember in the end of the book, and I want to say it might even be the final line of the book. Of course, Paul has decided to take the hand of the emperor's daughter in order to consolidate his power. And in the book, Chani is obviously... I mean, she knows he's going to do it, and she's sort of resigned, but she's obviously unhappy, but, you know, she's just kind of like... In the movie, it was a complete surprise. She was very angry at him for all the things that he had done, including taking the Water of Life, because he's buying into all this fundamentalism that she completely doesn't want to have anything to do with. So they were kind of on a break, but when he asked for the emperor's hand, the daughter's hand, she was just stricken, and she leaves at the end of the movie. At the end of the book, Jessica is talking to her and saying, you know, this marriage, don't worry, you know, Paul loves you, this is a marriage of convenience and nothing else, and they may call you a consort and me a concubine, but history will call us wives. And I love that line in the book, but I thought the movie made the better choice when she's just like, she's just pissed off. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think Zendaya's version of Chani has a lot more agency than the original character, because Chani was definitely very trodden down at the end of this movie, like being like, oh, I don't want anything, and just, oh God, that was hard to read. But Zendaya, you can really appreciate a little bit more, because Paul does seem to be, he's becoming more of the bad guy that everybody has been saying online is like, oh, did everybody just forget the fact that Paul's the bad guy? And like, I didn't get that when I was reading the books. I saw somebody who was just like, maybe a little bit weak in Dune Messiah and unable to stop stuff that he had set in motion. But in Dune, it was more like he was doing everything he could to protect himself and his mother. And everything he did to give himself the power to do that just set the whole jihad of the Fremen on all the other houses in motion. But they're definitely making it so that Paul is being more ruthless here, I think.
A little bit, though. I don't know. I mean, I got done with the movie. Maybe it's because I'd been prepared for that, because people have been talking about that. Oh, they're making the bad guy. They're making the bad guy. I don't know. The way I was watching the movie, I mean, obviously, we're not supposed to think that he's going to be on the side of the angels. He's going to start a religious war. But I did feel more like, no matter what he did, he was going to be sucked into it, and he just couldn't back away from it. And so I still felt that he was more of a tragic character.
Yeah, because I know Herbert, he definitely doesn't believe a lot in free will. I mean, I've seen that in various things, and I remember that just kind of hit me like right between the eyes when I reread Dune, you know, years after the first time, and when Paul is coming to the realization that he's been trying to do everything he could to stop the jihad from taking place, and he ended up causing it, and him realizing that was what had happened. So I don't know that they necessarily brought that tragicness out so much in the movie, but yeah, he's Zendaya, Chani certainly thinks that that's what's happening with him, that he's actually guilty of all this.
Oh, yeah. There's so many good things about it. I will tell you, though, there was a moment, probably about halfway through, where I just suddenly had this realization. I was like, huh, if I was watching this at home, this would be the point where I'd pause it and I'd pick it up another night, you know? Uh-huh. It was just like,
it was a lot.
A little long. Yeah, it was quite a bit.
And even with that, they did cut off a bit of stuff to try to fit everything in. So, which just leaves more for the third movie, which apparently they've released a teaser trailer for the third movie already. So, I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe it was a fan made something or other. I'll have to take a look afterwards. I could have prepared before this, but that's not our style.
No. I just looked at some of the trivia, which surprisingly, there's not like a crap ton of trivia. I did like the fact the director didn't put in a closing, like an end credits scene and everything. Mm-hmm. This director says he'll never do that. He likes the movie to be shaped with an ending that he has control of, and to add an end credit scene seems weird to him, so he's just not going to do that. I'm like, oh, bravo.
Yeah, Nathan used to work part-time in a movie theater, and they all hated the Marvel movies with their end credit scenes, because I probably said this before, but the people cleaning the movie theater only have a few minutes to clean it in between movies, and when you have an end credit scene, it means there are people who will be in the chairs the entire time, which means you can't go in and clean. So I can understand Marvel's reasoning for putting in end credits, because they really do want people to stay and at least acknowledge the names of all these people who put so much in the movie. But really, I think maybe it's played out. I mean, do you suppose like the Marvel fatigue might have people saying like, I don't want to have to sit for 5 minutes and wait for the end credit scene. Couldn't we just end it now?
Yeah. I liked the Marvel end credit scenes in the beginning. I thought they were fun. But yeah, you're right. Nowadays, I'm just kind of like, ugh, this movie was long enough already. I'd like to go now.
Yes. Well, I had the Run Pee app going, so I could find the best time to go take a mini break. And they specifically say there's nothing in the credits or at the end of the credits. So I like when they do that.
What moment did they say to do the pee?
I can't remember. I think Chani was talking with Paul about something, and there was like a 3-minute block of time when they're really wasn't much happening afterwards, but it was like, God, I want to say it was like 46 minutes into the movie, so it was a pretty good time to pick, I think.
All right. yeah. I kind of winged it, and I felt fine. It was when he had finally agreed that he would go south, and that he would, quote-unquote, do whatever he had to do. And I ran to the bathroom and came back just right the moment before he was about ready to drink the water of life. And I'm like, good. I feel like I timed that pretty well.
For some reason, I like the fact that they actually showed that process of, like, drowning a mini sandworm in order to get the water of life. I'm just like, they didn't really go into detail in the book. But once again, whoever's doing the directing, the cinematography, you know, all the imagery, whatever, they came up with some really fascinating stuff.
Beautiful. Beautiful. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out PixelatedGeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. No new photo galleries. We need to do another fan art gallery at some point.
We really do, yes. Well, we might be traveling later on next month. So maybe we can have like a fan art post sometime.
Ah, that'd work. Anyway, all that and more, PixelatedGeek.com. So next week, it's two more episodes of Lore Olympus barreling right down towards the end.
We've had to actually do some calculating because I only had a few more of those coins left on Webtoons in order to do fast passes. So I had to sit there and think, all right, we've got seven more episodes, which means I'm going to need to do fast passing three more times. And then the last episode is going to be a standalone one, which means I need this many coins. So it's just... I want to know how it ends. I want it to be resolved well, and yet I can't imagine what we're going to do when it's done.
No. Rachel, I believe it was on Threads that she put this, but it could have been Blue Sky, but she said that she doesn't have kids, but she imagines, you know, finishing up a project like this is like watching your kids go off to college. You're really, really sad to see them go, but you're really looking forward to maybe turning their room into a crafting room. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I think she's tired at this point. She's looking forward to doing something new and different.
I know this has been an exhausting process for her. I hope she's making all the money. I guess they've kind of like backed off on the idea of doing an animated movie. So if she just wants to do books after this, I'd be okay with that.
That'd be fine. But we will talk about that and whatever other thing crosses our path. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Yeah, and then Gar. Because Cecil, sorry, Gar.